Welcome to FemTech at Work, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology, health, and women's empowerment in the workplace. Hosted by me, Maaike Steinebach. This show will dive into the innovative solutions transforming women's health and well-being in the workplace. Join us as we chat with FemTech founders, industry leaders, and change makers who are pioneering advancements in FemTech and women's health. We discuss everything: menstrual health, reproductive rights, menopause, but also the challenges women face in the workplace and how innovation can overcome them. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting your FemTech journey, FemTech at Work is here to inspire and inform you about the future of health and wellness for women everywhere. Tune in and be part of the conversation. Welcome to today's episode of FemTech at Work with my guest, Faraday Bishop, who is the Chief Medical Officer at Heronova. Faraday, I'm so excited to have you. Welcome to today's episode.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm pleased to be here and look forward to our little chat. Thank you for the invitation.
Yes, thank you. So you're the Chief Medical Officer of Heronova. You have a fascinating background. Can you share a little bit about your background and how you connected and started your work at Heronova?
Yes. So my career began in academics after a graduate training at MD Anderson Cancer Center. I'm actually trained in cancer biology. And from there, what really struck me was the lack of tools that we have clinically. So I'm a clinically trained PhD and realized very quickly that we're doing great things in the lab, but we're not really moving quickly to the bedside or to the testing. I started there at MD Anderson. I did my graduate work and then joined Baylor College of Medicine as part of their faculty in the Department of OB-GYN, where I was introduced to women's health and beginning with non-invasive prenatal testing, or at the time, invasive prenatal testing, and also some early work on endometriosis and male infertility. So I was very active during my tenure at Baylor. From there, I left and continued the passion of taking what is developed at the bench and making it into a bedside test, a test that can benefit women and patients. But in everything I've done, it's been directly related to women's health, from breast cancer to prenatal testing to endometriosis. So again, pleasure to be here to talk to you more about that in a moment.
Amazing. One of the pioneers in women's health, so badly needed. How did you come about Heronova, and what is it that you were doing some early work in endometriosis? Maybe can you explain a little bit what is endometriosis for the people that don't know about it, and why is it that individuals and women in particular, of course, face so many challenges with endometriosis?
Yeah, there's a lot there now. So let's begin with what is endometriosis. Endometriosis is a very common gynecologic condition. And this condition impacts one out of every 10 women. Most women have symptoms that range anywhere from severe chronic pelvic pain with abnormal menstrual bleeding, and then often infertility arises as well. As a result, quality of life is really impacted, where a woman's not able to focus on her daily activities. She misses time at work. And she's struggling with trying to understand, what is this condition? What do I have? Because today we do not have a way of diagnosing this condition in the absence of surgery. And because surgery has risks, many women don't actually consider surgery until several visits to the doctor. And when she gets to a point where I really need to know what this is. And surgery is often at that point combined with diagnosis and possibly treatment. So what brought me to Heronova is, yes, 30 years ago, I began some of the very frontier visionary work of looking at what are the common genetic changes that might be occurring in this condition that we could potentially screen for or help identify women earlier so that we know when to expect disease, how to better manage it. Given again my background in cancer and some of the similarities that endometriosis displays, but I don't want the listening community to think that this is a cancer. It's not.
Mm.
It looks like it, but it doesn't ultimately behave like a cancer. But the features are common enough that as scientists, we look at those features and we try to understand how can we identify these early enough so that we can give women a diagnosis. So endometriosis, again, as I said, is a common condition. I personally think it's more common than 1 in 10 because of the stigmatization and the sort of lack of education in the form of being aware that this disease exists. I had a friend who was driving me to the airport, had her daughter in the car and said, I'm really sorry I had to bring her, but she had such bad pain today and her period started and it's just not normal. And we go through this every month. And immediately
wow.
I'm thinking, okay, here's an example of someone
yeah.
who probably has very early onset and will unfortunately not get a definitive diagnosis for a few years, perhaps.
Yeah, I understand it takes about 8 to 9 years on average for endometriosis to get diagnosed.
Yes.
Wow.
Because the surgical risk and obviously the cost.
Mm.
Many doctors feel, let's see if we can address this with birth control. Let's see if we can monitor this with habit, lifestyle, etc. So it's almost like you're dismissed. This is not really pain. It'll get better. But in fact, it's real. It's not normal. And adolescents and young girls need to know that early on so they don't sort of accept it as normal, because that's what we do. We then say, oh, this is just normal. It's just my period, you know.
Yeah, take an aspirin.
Right. And, you know, as a woman, we've been there. I've been there. And many of us who are now gone through menopause know those phases. But again, it's really debilitating when it goes unchecked. And I think we need to have a solution for these women. There must be a solution.
Yeah. So before we get into what Heronova has specifically developed, what is the treatment for endometriosis? At the moment, there is a surgery. Do they then take that lining out? Is that the way it's treated?
Well, surgery is part of it. So what they do is actually what happens is endometriosis is when you have your period, the tissue actually flushes back into your uterus and it can implant in areas where it doesn't belong. And therefore, every time you have a cycle, it kind of behaves like your uterine lining. And as a result, it causes what are called adhesions and other sort of wound areas, fibrous areas, and all of this causes pain and discomfort, and it can get really, you know, severe in some. So the key is to do surgery to release those adhesions and, of course, remove any lesions if they're problematic. Okay. But the real treatment, the surgery is not treating the root cause of disease. Mm. Many of these women have a recurrence within 3-4 years. So surgery is sort of a temporary solution, a band-aid, but it's not necessarily curative. Why don't we have targeted drugs? Well, because it's really difficult to carry out well-designed clinical studies when you need surgery to identify your population of subjects. So again, a test that can do the same thing without surgery, but using a blood draw would be very useful, not just in patient management, but also in clinical trials. It is out there and many companies that want to take on this route, but the real challenge is the time, the cost of patient selection for surgery. So you can see where the bottleneck is right away. And having a test that can allow you to do this without surgery gets you patients earlier. And then diagnosis is made, prognosis is better. They're not dealing with a condition that's unknown and therefore getting worse as time goes on. So again, everything earlier is better. And that's our mission. The mission is to offer the tools that the doctors then know how to use and then put into practice.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. I'm so excited about this because I heard a stat the other day that basically said there are as many patients with endometriosis as they are patients with diabetes. But the research for endometriosis is about 30 years behind. So it's very exciting to see that you guys are really catching up on this because obviously, assuming this is all working, it's going to be a game changer for so many women.
Absolutely.
Can you walk me through a little bit how the test works? What Heronova is bringing to market? Is it a blood test? Is it a urine test? Is it a saliva test? How does it work?
It's a blood test.
Okay.
So just about 2 tablespoons of blood, roughly 5 mLs, 5 cc's in clinical terminology. But once we have that blood, that's it. We then take that blood, process it in the lab. And what we do is we isolate what's called the serum. So we take the serum fraction of the blood. And serum is just a clear liquid. It's a biofluid. And in it, what circulates is nucleic acid like DNA, like RNA, like protein. And these are normally shed throughout your body. And as this is shed through regular cell turnover, it's measurable in your blood serum. So again, I'm simplifying it to an extent. But if you take that blood sample now and you know which markers to look at and measure, you can effectively develop a test that can differentiate a woman that has endometriosis as compared to a woman that does not.
Oh, wow.
So technically, that's what we do. We look for the signature in your blood serum that would then indicate you have this condition as opposed to not.
Wow.
Yeah, no. And remember, I started this 30 years ago. Joining Heronova is like, it helped me come full circle in that.
Yes.
I began with sort of unknown and the field has been percolating over the last 20, 30 years. And I feel like the timing was just perfect. The opportunity to come in and do this made all the sense. So that's why this test to me is personal in the sense that it's from the start of my career in terms of how do we help diagnose this horrible condition to where we are today. And it's exciting. It's exciting. It's long overdue. And having a test like this can be incredibly beneficial.
I always am surprised when I speak to women like you or scientists like you to see how long the lead time of all of this is. So that so many amazing work has been done, but that it still takes so long to kind of get to this space. So, I mean, I don't want to go into kind of all of the negativity, but do you think endometriosis or women's health conditions were necessarily a priority? Or is it, as you said, that sometimes also the clinical trials are really hard to do because you require specific profiles of women? Why do you think it takes so long? Why do we have such a gap, let's say, in the women's health research and data?
A very good, really great. I could talk about this all day long.
Me too.
So part of the biggest challenge is education and understanding that conditions like endometriosis indeed exist. That number one has been lacking because the friend I told you about in the car didn't even know what endometriosis was. And she said she had it, her daughter had it. So clearly there's some familial component there. But nevertheless, here we are. We have had to overcome challenges with regards to funding. As you know, funding in this field, when you compare to oncology, when you compare to cardiac disease, and then you realize that endometriosis is so prevalent. Why isn't there attention? And frankly, I believe it's for lack of education, quite honestly, and the lack of voice in terms of demanding more focus in this field, in this area. And as you said, the ease of doing studies, the ease of this disease is biologically complex. It's not a all or none, but no disease that goes on without a test is easy. Look at breast cancer. 1 in 9 women, I'm a breast cancer survivor. So 1 in 9 have breast cancer or will develop breast cancer in their life. Well, how is that? That's not very different from endometriosis, which can impact your fertility, which can impact your ability to contribute to society, to work, to have a normal, fulfilling life. I mean, those factors need to be considered critical and important and need attention because the healthcare system is paying the price for it. If we could detect sooner, we would be in a much better positive position.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, healthy women, healthy communities, healthy countries, healthy cities, you know, we need to keep our women healthy. And I'm really excited about what this could mean for the women. Is the test already in the market? And it's in the US, right? So you were launching it in the US first. How do you see the future of this developing? Where will it go? And then my second question is a little bit related to what we just spoke about around the gender health gap. Do you think that women of different ethnic backgrounds experience endometriosis differently? Mm-hmm. Does that change in any way the way Heronova kind of rolls out the product going forward?
Yeah, again, a loaded question there, lots of parts, but let me try to begin and remind me if I leave something out and don't answer. So with regards to gender gap, our test is really designed to be accessible to women around the world. So our goal is to be a global company with a global presence with our diagnostic tests, beginning with this endometriosis test. And how is that happening? Well, technologies today can get really elaborate and very costly. When we took on this program, our goal was to, again, develop a product that is affordable, is available, and accessible around the world, meaning it's based on a platform called quantitative PCR, which is relatively common and well understood and available in labs worldwide. And that's not the case for like sequencing, like NGS. So a test like ours is, again, and it's a blood draw. So you just need a small amount of blood. And once that is done, the rest is in the lab, the lab's hand. So accessibility is key. Now, does endometriosis impact certain ethnic groups as opposed to others? My understanding is yes. And why? Because women of certain socioeconomic groups don't have access to that medical care the way others do. So a disease or condition like an endometriosis that goes undetected and unmanaged has the potential to progress and be more problematic. So I would assume that this would translate into women today who are experiencing endometriosis. And again, my goal is to have a test that everyone, you know, we talk about having your pap smear. Don't miss your pap smear. Go get your pap smear done. Then it's go get your mammogram done. But we don't do really anything for the uterus or the uterine sort of area. So that's why I think a blood test that could detect when something is wrong is really of value. And if it's diagnostic for like endometriosis, then it could save time and money in the end.
Yeah.
And be far more effective.
So what has been the feedback so far?
We recently debuted at the American Society of Reproductive Medicine conference in Denver. That was just a week and a half.
Wow.
And the overall reception was really great. Most of the attendees are clinicians, reproductive clinicians. clinicians, general OB-GYN clinicians, and they all knew how to use the test. They were really pleased, and what they all wanted to participate as early access sites. But I'll explain that. Yes, we've launched in the U.S. U.S. is an incredible place to launch a diagnostic test like this because you have such a diverse population of women. And the reception was great with doctors knowing, I know how to use this test. When can I have access to it? So again, everything I've talked about here resonated with the group. So I believe the overall community sort of reception to this test is going to be good, very positive, because there's been nothing. We've done nothing to improve this field for women over a couple of decades.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. So nobody else has been working in this space, right?
No, there are competitors. There's healthy competition.
Okay.
When you know you're on to something is when you know you have competition out there,
yes.
Right? We're working towards the same goal, which is getting a product out there to help women. Now, where are we in this? FDA has clarified that we are a de novo 510K, which basically means there's no other predicate test out there. We would be the first in class, first to obtain clearance. Yes, there are competitors, and my goal is to be aware of who they are, but to really focus on the quality and the performance of the product we have developed and created. As a scientist, I've looked at the patent sort of side of it. So when it comes to IP, I'm confident that we have a good IP position there. And at the same time, I'm also focused on how it performs, where I need to improvements. Because again, it's good to know competition is there. The marketing team needs to be aware of that. But from the scientific perspective, my focus is always on quality and being sure that we do meet the expectation of a good test. So other competent, there's a test out there with saliva, but it looks at 100 different markers, the time it takes to test, and it's not available in the U.S. as of yet that I'm aware. There are some other tests that are available, but you have to be cautious. Not all are non-invasive, meaning some actually need a biopsy. So by definition, that's not non-invasive and so forth. So again, competition is good. Do I feel threatened at this point? Not necessarily. But my focus is focus on what I'm doing and deliver a good product.
Yeah, exactly. That's the right attitude. I think at the end of the day, as a woman and a mother of a daughter, I'm super excited to see all these new things coming to market, hoping she doesn't have to experience what a lot of women before her have had to experience. And I think a bit of healthy competition is also good because it kind of keeps everybody on their toes and from a patient perspective, creates the best customer experience eventually, right?
Yes.
And what I like about what you've been doing is kind of bringing this to market first in the US. So what I know and what I understand, and obviously you know way better, but going through the FDA clearance in the US is like the gold standard. So once you've done that, it's much easier to move into other markets.
That's right. The bar of quality that comes with FDA clearance is really what gives you that gold star. So
yeah,
that's what we're hoping to achieve.
Where would you go after the US? I mean, I can imagine that's a long-term planning, right? And you've only just started in the US. But is there some thinking from the company about where to go next and how to deploy the product globally eventually?
Yes. We're certainly considering global distribution, including Europe, including Asia, Hong Kong, particularly. And how do we get there? We partner. This is where partnerships become important.
Yeah.
Currently, it's a single lab test, but you partner with the right organization that has the right sort of sales landscape. They have the people. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You partner with the experts who know how to launch the product, and what are the hurdles in the different areas globally. You know, the US is its own set of rules, but Europe has its and Asia has its. So
yeah,
again, partnership is going to be the key for doing that effectively.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. But I'm also very excited about the fact that I looked on Heronova's website and you have an amazingly diverse kind of leadership team. If I'm correct, I also spotted a Dutch male in there somewhere.
Yes.
And you're all also scattered around the world, which is really interesting in two ways. Because firstly, a lot of the biotech or femtech companies that I come across are either very female dominated or very male dominated. So this is a very beautiful mix, both in terms of the co-founders and the rest of the team, but then also culturally. How have you experienced that? And do you think it has helped kind of accelerate the go-to-market for Heronova?
Well, absolutely. We have a clinical lab in Asia, as you may or may not know, and that really helped catapult my research and development because access to patient samples and control is really vastly different than the U.S. So being an international company like Heronova gives us the advantage, and me particularly, the advantage of leveraging the power that we have in Asia. So there, what I can achieve, what it takes me to do in 6 months in the U.S., I can do in 1 month in Asia easily.
Yeah.
So that's how I got to where I am as quickly as I did, because, you know, I spent time there. I flew there. I ran the lab. I worked with the clinical team, and that really helped do it. So I think one of the magical sort of pieces of a good company structure is one that is sort of international, because you have to take into account other rules, other restrictions, and that helps sort of guide and formulate the plan, what you need to do.
I guess also it brings a lot of diversity of thought. So you have so many people with such amazing backgrounds that, you know, any problem, just bringing people together, you can solve quite easily. But I love that you also mentioned about your facilities in Asia, because I do think that is a strength of Asia, where the ability to kind of run clinical trials and get access to very large population groups is easier to do, which is wonderful. So you've obviously developed a technology and a diagnostic that can probably also be used for other things going forward, right? So are you looking to kind of expand the product range? Are you looking at other things as well? And what kind of gets you excited for the future?
Well, what gets me really excited is that we're starting to see data that may help us understand more about what is the cause of endometriosis? What is it? Once we know or can understand the cause, we then have a much better way of treating it directly, precisely, as opposed to treating symptoms only. So, and then along with that, we've got a vision, a pipeline that really addresses everything from screening for gynecologic conditions, not just endometriosis, but other conditions that cause pain, that disrupt quality of life, that really interfere with a woman's sort of ability to function. So there are other conditions. Endometriosis is one of the most common. Yeah. There are others. So the idea would be to expand upon that. By the time we get this product well off the ground, my database will be expanded. We'll have many more samples in. And that's going to help us develop and create beyond where we are now. So the idea is to have a central platform, and then we build from that for different conditions and diseases. So yeah, I'm
Oh, that's exciting. Yes, that's amazing. Well, maybe just one final question. I hope our listeners are also kind of budding entrepreneurs and people that are interested in some shape or form in the women's health space. Do you have any advice for kind of people, entrepreneurs that are looking to innovate in the women's healthcare space or healthcare more broadly, based on your extensive 30-year experience?
Yeah, I think the one piece of advice that helped me along the way is confidence. Believing in what you can do and not, it's good to go out and ask for advice. It's strongly worthwhile. You want to talk to people. But when you have an idea and you feel in your soul that this really makes sense and you want to work that out, have that confidence in yourself to see it through and don't be dissuaded. Because sometimes I put things aside, I'll get to it later. Maybe I didn't think about it correctly. If you're really passionate and you really feel that what you envision is the right way, do it.
Yeah.
Take that step. There is a support structure now that I think didn't exist when I began. And, you know, I was in a faculty that was 95% men.
Yeah.
And as a female faculty member, you know, I felt like I had to work a little bit harder, a little bit tougher, because I had to show that it had nothing to do with gender.
Yes.
I could do the same thing. So again, I think women are getting recognized, but it's maintaining your voice, maintaining your confidence, and seek out others. Seek out mentors who have gone down that route to give you that support structure that you may want to have every now and then. Again, I think I love being a mentor, and I think I was blessed to have very good mentors throughout my career. And I would say if you have a mentor, stick with that person and work with them.
Yeah.
And share your thoughts. Don't let them die off because you feel a sense of maybe it's not good enough. That may not be the case.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of Femtech at Work. Oh my God, I learned so much from you, and I'm so excited for all the women globally that you're working in this space. So thank you so much, and really look forward to following your journey. And I think in a year's time, I will probably do a Where Are They Now part of the podcast and come back to you. But thank you so much for your time and wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure. Pleasure is all mine. Thank you.